This week on Vaticano, explore Lebanon's new Camino, paths once traveled by Christ and the Romans that will celebrate the country's religious heritage. Father Antonio Aurelio discusses the Trinitarian Order's 800-year mission to support persecuted Christians, plus meet the choir of the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C., as they visit Rome for a special pilgrimage during the 2025 Jubilee. Vaticano starts now.
Buona domenica a tutti.
Pope Francis made his first public appearance since leaving the hospital and spoke briefly at the Mass celebrating the Jubilee of the sick and healthcare workers, something that is very close to the Holy Father's heart. He directed a few short words to the thousands of pilgrims gathered, thanking them and wishing them a good Sunday. Two of the pilgrims traveled all the way from Krakow. Jolanta and her daughter Ola brought all the colors of the rainbow with them to show that life with Lee syndrome can be beautiful. Ola was diagnosed at 3 years old with a severe neurological disorder and was only given 2 years to live until she found refuge in Rome at the Bambin Gesù Children's Hospital.
Rome, you can say, has been our second home for the last 14 years. We come to the hospital here, where Ola found help for her illness, which is incurable. And it's very difficult. After all, Ola was healthy, she got sick late. And thanks to Cardinal Dziwisz, who directed us to our Polish-Italian doctor, Rita Sworca-Wieczykowska, we were able to get into a clinical trial, which de facto is being carried out as the first facility here at the Bambin Gesù. But it is a drug from California that Ola is trying out experimentally.
Being a single mother with a sick child who requires 24-hour care is not an easy thing. But Yola finds joy in these challenges.
I draw my strength from heaven. Faith is my biggest source of strength. If I didn't have my faith, I'd be in the grave of my own life, in darkness and depression. I had to revalue everything, turn suffering into joy, the sadness. I wouldn't have been able to do that without God. If God told us that in the sick, those suffering, the lepers, were supposed to see Jesus Christ, then I am caring for Christ.
Rome, April the 12th, 1947. A communist, a Protestant, a man plotting to assassinate Pope Pius XII. His name was Bruno Cornacchiola, and he came to this place, Tre Fontane, to prepare a speech meant to tear down the Catholic Church and her doctrine. It was geared especially against the Virgin Mary. He left his children to play, but when their voices vanished, he went searching. What he found changed everything. His children on their knees repeating, "Beautiful lady, beautiful lady."
E dice una frase molto forte.
She said something very strong. "You are persecuting me. Enough of it now. Enter into the sheepfold, the holy court of heaven on earth." That's how the Virgin calls the Catholic Church, the holy sheepfold.
Bruno described her. White dress, rose-colored belt, green mantle, holding the scriptures to her heart. This man, who once wanted to destroy the church, became one of the church's boldest defenders. Bruno's conversion brought thousands back to the faith.
He was very resolute and strong when he spoke, but it was precisely the strength in truth and in faith that made it possible for many people to return to the Catholic Church.
Bruno died in 2001, but the grotto remains untouched. A place of miracles, conversion, and profound peace. The shrine's significance continues to grow. On January the 4th, 2025, Pope Francis appointed the shrine's former rector, Father Renato Tarantelli, as auxiliary bishop and vice-regent of the Diocese of Rome. Bruno Cornacchiola's story continues to be remembered by those who visit this unique corner of Rome.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates, the most important news from the Holy Father and the Vatican. Pope Francis has donated 4 ambulances that will be deployed in war-torn areas in Ukraine. The papal almoner Cardinal Konrad Krajewski will be responsible for delivering these ambulances, which bear the Vatican's coat of arms. They'll be also filled with medical equipment, and it's not the first time that the Vatican is sending an ambulance to the region, nor is Cardinal Krajewski new to this undertaking. He has visited the war zone more than a dozen times on behalf of Pope Francis. The prefect of the Dicastery for the Eastern Churches, Cardinal Claudio Guttarotti, invited Catholics to contribute to the annual Good Friday collection. The official collection provides essential resources and helps maintain the Church's structures in the Holy Land. Together with the custody of the Holy Land, he keeps reminding the faithful worldwide that the few remaining Christians in the region need concrete and immediate help. Veronica's veil is the cloth that, according to tradition, was used to wipe the face of Jesus on his way to Calvary. On the fifth Sunday of Lent, St. Peter's Basilica exposed the revered fabric for a short minute. The relic, also known as the Holy Face, is brought to the so-called Veronica Loggia during an extraordinary liturgy. Afterward, the Archpriest of the Basilica, Cardinal Mauro Gambetti, celebrated Mass with the many faithful who came to see the real face of Jesus. Working towards peace, Archbishop Paul Gallagher and Sergei Lavrov, Russia's Minister of Foreign Affairs, held a phone call together. The Archbishop is the Vatican's Secretary for Relations with the States and International Organizations. He and Lavrov discussed the overall picture of world politics with particular attention to the situation of the war in Ukraine, as the Vatican stated afterwards. The Vatican also released a historical document to recognize the opening of the Council of Nicaea. The International Theological Commission published the in-depth document Jesus Christ, Son of God, Savior, celebrating the 1,700th anniversary of the Ecumenical Council and to highlight its significance. The Commission sees the Nicene Creed to be at the heart of the Church's faith. As always, thank you so much for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. The Jubilee year 2025 bears the motto Pilgrims of Hope. From every corner of the world, pilgrims are traveling to Rome to pass through the holy doors and rediscover the heart of the faith. Inspired by this spirit, Lebanon has launched Caminos Lebanon, a network of pilgrimage routes across lands once walked by saints like Charbel and Rafka, and even in the southern hills by Jesus Christ himself. At the heart of the initiative is Susie El-Haj, its general coordinator and visionary founder.
Every human being is on a pilgrimage journey on this earth, walking to the kingdom of heaven. As a concept creator, I have always had this idea in mind. While the initiative highlights cultural, religious, spiritual, and economic tourism, its deep significance lies in walking toward the kingdom of glory.
Caminos Lebanon took shape through the efforts of key figures, including Father Abbot Khalil Alwan, president of the Association of Pilgrimages in Lebanon, and project manager Nur Farah Haddad. Since 2017, the vision has matured, and finally, on March the 28th, 2025, it was officially launched. Blessed by the Maronite Patriarch and supported by the Lebanese government, over 10 themed routes now stretch across sacred mountains, monastic valleys, and remote villages, connecting shrines from north to south.
These are paths of faith, paths of spirituality, paths of prayer, because they are filled with monasteries and churches. those who walk them feel a deep inner peace, because peace is born from faith, from prayer.
We would like to encourage Caminos Lebanon and encourage people from all over the world to come and discover all the different Lebanese trails and from all different religions. I think it's going to be a beautiful project to follow.
On the day Caminos Lebanon was launched, two Israeli missiles struck Beirut, fracturing a fragile truce between Israel and Hezbollah, a testimony to the difficult situation the country is experiencing. But neither fear nor bad weather the next day would stop Raya's Camino of Hope. The very next morning, in the foggy hills of Miziara, young people from a group called Raya laced their boots, rang the bells, and launched Raya's Camino of Hope in relation to the Jubilee of Hope. Raya, short for Rosary and Adoration Youth Apostolate, takes its name from Raya, a young woman killed defending her dignity, in a story echoing that of St. Maria Goretti, who chose death rather than losing her virginity, and who even forgave her killer. After her brutal death, Raya appeared in a dream to Victoria Menez, asking for a church, a pilgrimage, and a voice for the voiceless.
There was a strong sun heat on my back, telling me, I want the piece of land here, and I want it from my mom. I want a pilgrimage, and I want it only for the youth. And I want it for the girls who doesn't have voices. And I do want rosaries made out of hearts, and I want them pink. This was the emphasis on her dream, but I want the church to be built into Maria. But she did not tell me Maria Goretti.
I am Marie Kidiak from Miziara, the mother of Raya, who passed away on the 22nd of September 2017. Raya, 26 years old, born on the 14th of January 1991, was our eldest daughter. Raya appeared in the dreams of many people, asking for a church to be dedicated to Saint Maria Goretti. We hadn't known about the saint before, and neither had Raya. But we later discovered that the saint's life story closely mirrors Raya's.
Church authorities discerned the messages. The shrine was built exactly where Raya requested. The sanctuary, shaped like a rose and a candle, has become a place of grace. Moved by Raya's story, local church authorities have begun gathering testimonies for a possible cause of beatification.
What we went through after Raya's death was incredibly difficult. None of us could move on easily, but it is not by our own strength that we had moved forward. It is through a higher divine power that continues to guide and sustain us in becoming who we are today.
In 2025, Maronite Patriarch awarded Raya's youth an honorary shield and chose Marie as the face of hope for the Jubilee year. The youth pilgrimage begins at the sanctuary of St. Maria Goretti and winds through seven sacred sites, including the Chapel of Padre Pio, St. Nimtala, Our Lady of Miziara, and St. Rita. At each stop, they pause to pray and ring the bells to mark their passage.
When I was drawing the maps for this Camino, I was thinking about a way to attract youth to walk this Camino. And we chose seven churches, and actually we got inspired from St. Philippe Neri. What we have here is a treasure, not only a Camino. We have 13 churches. We have youth that is willing to do anything for church.
In Lebanon, we have a lot of gifts, and it's our responsibility to show our beauty to the whole world, especially our holy land. So such a project is very important, especially we want the youth to experience this gift we have.
What began centuries ago in Rome as the Seven Churches pilgrimage is now reborn in the hills of Lebanon, led by a new generation of saints in Raya's Camino of Hope, And across the country, each Camino carries its own saints, stories, and steps of hope. From war zones to refugee camps, Trinitarians provide food, shelter, and spiritual support to persecuted Christians around the world. The Trinitarian Order began in the Middle Ages during the Crusades with a radical mission to ransom Christian captives. They didn't just negotiate, they offered themselves in exchange, stepping into dungeons so others could walk free. They were the first religious order in church history to leave the monastery. Not to preach, but to redeem. More than 8 centuries later, they still do.
The foundation was officially approved in 1198 when we received a letter from Pope Innocent III endorsing our own rule. Our order was born during the time of the Fourth Crusade. The founder established a community whose mission went beyond the walls of the monastery. He left his own home to rescue and redeem Christians held in Muslim prisons. In turn, Muslims who were being held in parts of Europe, especially in the south, were also exchanged.
From this mission emerged a new concept of religious life within the church, a life not confined to the monastery, but one that reaches outward, toward others, especially those in greatest need. Father Antonio Aurelio Fernandez Serrano shares that their story is not a history lesson. It's a living charism.
Even today, there are still so many people in prison because of their faith. And then there are others who may not be behind bars, but are still suffering persecution for the same reason, their belief in Christ. That's why an organization was created called Trinitarian International Solidarity. Its mission is specifically to support persecuted Christians and to defend religious freedom.
Para trabajar por los cristianos perseguidos y la libertad religiosa.
In 1999, that mission, once carried out in ransom negotiations, found a new form in Trinitarian International Solidarity, or SIT. Its purpose, to respond to today's captivity with today's tools, legal advocacy, humanitarian aid, and a promise never to abandon those who suffer for Christ's name.
There are people who are dying in extreme poverty, elderly people especially. So we saw a very urgent need to create centers where they can come together and spend their final years with dignity. These are extremely, extremely serious situations. In Nigeria, we all know about the girls kidnapped by Boko Haram. It made headlines. But after a few months, people just forget about it. Since then, the Trinitarians have been there continuously, year after year, rescuing them, freeing them, supporting them, and finding centers to shelter them. It's important to note that India has risen on the scale of religious persecution. Just last year, it entered the category of extreme persecution. In fact, 2 or 3 years ago, the president of India himself said that anyone who is not Hindu is not truly a citizen of India.
No es ciudadano de la India.
Whether in Syria, Nigeria, or Northeast India, Trinitarians stand beside the invisible victims, bringing hope, medicine, food, and above all, their presence. Through discreet, respectful documentation, Trinitarians collect footage from communities under attack, often too raw for mainstream media. These testimonies are shared on their website to make the unseen suffering visible.
We share these videos, which are very dramatic. You can clearly see women being assaulted, beaten, even shot. These are videos that many mainstream media outlets refuse to show. So we publish them directly on our website so people can see the reality for themselves.
This visual archive became the foundation of their recent documentary, marking 25 years of the Trinitarian International Solidarity. Rather than showcasing their own work, the film amplifies the voices of those who endure persecution for their faith. Voices that remind the world why they suffer.
El mensaje cristiano.
It's the Christian message that frightens them. Christianity is the only religion, both philosophically and theologically, that truly seeks out the person, the individual. It focuses on the human person, and therefore on that person's wholeness, their dignity. And at the heart of Christian life is one essential foundation.
De vida, que es la libertad.
Freedom.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. Sacred music is an integral part of the life and mission of the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. The largest Catholic church in North America. Comprised of 16 professional singers, the choir of the Basilica is dedicated to providing excellence in sacred choral music in the context of liturgy throughout the liturgical year.
Music, in general, is really the highest form of art. It has the ability to really unite hearts and minds. People come together to pray, to praise, to learn, to be inspired, to experience the divine. And music is instrumental in doing that.
For the 2025 Jubilee, the choir embarked on a special pilgrimage to Rome. Through concerts in some of Rome's basilicas, like St. Mary Major and St. Peter's in Chains, they hoped to share the richness of the church's sacred music tradition with faithful and pilgrims.
What we're really dedicated to doing is providing beautiful music in the context of the liturgy at the National Shrine. But of course, we like to sort of share that art, that music, that form of evangelization, basically, by doing concerts. And what better place to do it in Rome during a jubilee year.
Their repertoire primarily features Renaissance music from the 16th and 17th centuries, along with contemporary American pieces from the 20th century.
I hope that it really brings them closer to God. Music has such a transcendent ability to transcend time and place and just really move people in such a way that sometimes words alone don't. And I think that it's a wonderful way to experience the church and God and your faith.
Music and beauty can be powerful tools of evangelization.
Not time.
Pope St. John Paul II emphasized this in his 1999 letter to artists, where he stressed the transformative and redemptive nature of beauty, including that of music in the world.
There's something about the sense of sound and the vibrations, the actual sound waves vibrating in your body. It almost penetrates your soul in such a way that sometimes other art forms don't.
For many listeners and even choir members, music can play a pivotal role in conversion and in coming to know the church. Sarah McKimmy, who first visited Rome with the choir in 2016 during the Year of Mercy, is a witness to the power of the music and its beauty to move hearts towards God.
I was so inspired and blown away by everything that I saw in Rome. It really made a huge impact on me. That plus everything that had happened during my first year singing at the shrine made me realize that I really wanted to be Catholic and be part of the church. So I was received into the church in 2017.
Sacred music points to the divine, the choir members stressed, but through its beauty, it also aims to bring joy.
We hope people come away from the concert feeling spiritually refreshed, spiritually renewed, feeling a deeper connection both to the text and to the music that we're going to be performing. But more than anything else, I hope they feel joy. That's really what we want to bring.
While sacred music is and has been a part of the church's tradition for centuries, there's nothing obsolete, outmoded, or lifeless about it. It's a living tradition.
It's important to remember that the church is not a museum either, and that it's a living, breathing institution. And what we need to do is speak to the people are there that are there to worship and inspire them. And the way to do that is to show them beauty, but in a way that fits into the liturgy.